Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, technology, therapeutics, and real-world perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by HCP Live Endocrinology, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I'm joined by Natalie Bellini. And we have a special episode today of our ADCES recap, or another recap episode. We have several of them. But on this one, we have a special guest, Dawn No, who is an amazing, amazing dietitian that I used to work with at Cleveland Clinic. And we're going to pick her brain about some of her sessions at ADCES. So, Dawn, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a dietitian and certified diabetes care and education specialist. I really wanted to become a CDCES after my mom was, I really wanted to learn about nutrition after my mom was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes almost 20 years ago. And then I was fortunate enough to have a CDCES as one of my professors in college. So I kind of knew right out the gate that I was going into diabetes-specific nutrition for a long time.
Awesome. And I know you've been really involved with ADCES over the years. I know we got to serve 1 year together on the board of directors, which was great. But can you tell us a little bit about your sessions that you presented? Can we start with your first one, Eating Your Way Through CGM Reports? Because I love the title. And
I do too. Great. Yeah. Really creative. And truthfully, we all know that eating is part of glucose management, right? And diet in general. So talk to us. Tell us where you came up with this and a little bit about your presentation.
Sure. Yeah. So my two favorite things to talk about when it comes to diabetes is nutrition and continuous glucose monitoring. And the reason they're my two favorite things is because they really pair up so nicely together. We know that food directly impacts blood sugars. And so I am just a huge believer in continuous glucose monitoring for anyone living with diabetes. Because when people see, like, in real time what's happening, they are really empowered to maybe do something with that information. And I felt like we were missing, I hadn't really seen a lot of talks on this before. So it was something I was very lucky, Diana, you know, we work together, and I was very lucky in clinical practice to work with you, where we did continuous glucose monitoring on a professional level in the clinic, where we put CGM on essentially everyone for 1 to 2 weeks at a time. And it was so cool to watch people with diabetes, just their eyes would light up when they had the aha moment, when they would see what was happening with nutrition on the CGM. I feel like the big one for me was every time we would do a professional continuous glucose monitoring class, somebody would say, you know, I noticed that when I eat my bagel for breakfast, my blood sugar goes up. But on the weekend when I eat eggs, my blood sugar doesn't go up. And it was like, it was so neat. And I mean, I probably heard that 500 times in clinical practice, but we weren't necessarily seeing that presented to other diabetes care and education specialists who may not have had the opportunity to work in a clinic like that. So I wanted to bring that level of aha moment and how impactful nutrition can be on glucose levels to our profession and to other CDCESs. And so that's kind of how it came to be. And what was really neat is ADCES and the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics paired together to kind of sponsor this talk. So we got connected. I got connected with another dietitian, CDCES, Nicole Sievers, and she's phenomenal. She lives with type 1 diabetes. And so she was actually able to use her real food and her real continuous glucose monitor to recreate what the research shows us about how food and nutrition impacts glucose. So a lot of the research that we have seen on, you know, how to time insulin or how to pair carbohydrate with protein, or looking at the quality of protein or quantity, or sorry, quality of carbohydrate or quantity of carbohydrate. That's what we wanted to show, is that all those things actually matter. And when you kind of can look at those in real time, you can fine tune the way that you eat to keep your blood sugar in the target range. So that was kind of the goal.
I love it. I love it so much, because we, as clinicians who download devices every day, there's so much discussion around food and nutrition, and pairing food together makes a huge difference. You know, you can eat an apple and spike, and you can eat an apple with a piece of cheese or two or some peanut butter and not, right? Yep. And see a completely different, I mean, we're talking 30, 40 points difference in just adding a little protein to food. But then it becomes balancing the amount of food in any given day. Because if all you do is add a bunch of extra protein and fat to everything, now you've added all this extra calories too. So how do you counsel around that side?
Yeah. So then we talked a little bit about how important fiber is, and how fiber can potentially slow the absorption of carbohydrates. So high fiber foods are going to be that carbohydrate quality. So that's where we really wanted to emphasize that the foods that are commonly known more in the Mediterranean style of eating. So things like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds are all things that are plant foods that also have fiber, and that they're very different. Eating some beans is very different than potentially eating a donut, right? So they may have the same amount of carbohydrate, but the quality matters, and the impact on glucose can matter. So we really wanted to emphasize that it's not always just about adding protein, but it's also about the quality of nutrition too, and working with where somebody is. And so Nicole really took the nitty gritty details of how the nutrition impacts glucose. And my part of the presentation was also approaching it from a person-centered approach, that we want to be aware of that not everyone is going to add, you know, beans to breakfast, right? Like very few people actually might want to add beans to breakfast, but we can figure out where they are and what of these like nutrition hacks might someone be willing and able to do.
So I want to hear more about these nutrition hacks, because I remember hearing once like in a presentation about like adding chia seeds to everything, and I hate chia seeds. Sorry for anyone that loves them. So like, what are these hacks that are like affordable, that are easier to do?
Yeah. So I love that Natalie mentioned the fruit one, right? So like an apple by itself can spike blood sugar, but if you do an apple with peanut butter, it can be like a completely different result. So that's one of them, is adding the protein to the carbohydrate food. Sometimes it is just like sneaking, and I gave the example of beans already, but I'm going to give it in a different way. Sometimes it is just like sneaking in some of that quality carbohydrate to a meal you already do. So if you already eat tacos on Tuesday and you want to add a little more quality carbohydrate, or maybe you're making nachos, right? I mean, a better example might even be nachos. Is if you could then kind of cut back on, maybe not eliminate, but cut back on the chips and add beans as a protein and a carbohydrate, and a very high quality carbohydrate, you may end up with the same amount of carbohydrate, but it may be a different spike in glucose. So just kind of figure out how to squeeze these foods. And one of the hacks that Nicole gave, I really like. She lives in Hawaii, the island of Hawaii, and there's a lot of ramen noodles there. So a hack that she gave an example of in our talk was to add leftover chicken or rotisserie chicken to the ramen, and then like a bag of frozen mixed vegetables to the ramen. So you don't have to do any extra cooking, but it cuts your carbs in half. It adds a vegetable, it adds a protein. So it adds the two foods that slow down the spike in glucose. It adds the protein, it adds the fiber from the vegetables, and then it cuts the carb portion down as well. So that was like such a cool hack that I love that she shared.
I love it. That is, yeah, that really makes a huge, you know, and that's it. If we think about, you know, time and range and this focus on time and range, and you're spiking for 2 hours after every meal, right? That's 6 hours a day. That's 25% of the time you're above target because of your meal, right? Because of your three meals a day. And God forbid you have a snack in there, right? So, you know, that is where we start getting into the, we really do have to focus on not just taking insulin on time. Some of these people aren't even taking insulin, right? You're just seeing these spikes because the body can't keep up. So we, you know, how do we work around that without adding another medication, without, and it's diet, right? It really is a change in nutrition, and it doesn't have to be expensive.
Yeah, and that's why Nicole calls them meal makeovers. And I just think that is the coolest thing, because it's still saying, I want to eat what I want to eat. I want to eat my favorite food. I might want to eat ramen noodles, but how can I make that ramen noodles work better for me? And it's such an empowered way of thinking. We're adding food versus taking food away. And I just love that mindset.
I'm really curious, do you have patients ever add like if they're carb counting, add additional carbs for like higher protein or higher fat type of meals?
You mean like if they're giving insulin?
Yeah. So, right. So like type 1 diabetes, like taking insulin, if you would have them enter in extra or give them extra insulin for those types of things.
Yes. And that, fortunately, there has been a little bit of literature on that. I mean, it's not, I would say, as well known, but for the last few years, I think there have been a couple publications on how to dose insulin for a higher fat, higher protein meal. And I think we even gave the study where that was shown in people with diabetes in the talk. But yes, you can. You got me off guard. I'm thinking it's a ratio of 4. We may have to edit this.
Well, I was just curious more what you do in practice, because I don't think it's well. I think it's so individualized. And I, like, for example, in the ADA standards of care, they mention that you should consider adding, but they don't say how to add. And I really think it's because it is so individualized, and it depend on like the percentage of fat protein in the meal and other contents and stuff. So I was just curious, because for those that are more savvy, you're trying to increase time in range. I shouldn't even say more savvy, but just willing to, I guess, do all this extra work. That could potentially increase time in range, but it's just so nuanced in terms of how to do it.
Yeah, so I agree that it's nuanced. But people do. I think a lot of times when you mention, you know, savvy, it's really just, it's almost a guess and check game, right? So you're playing detective. And the reality is, with type 1 diabetes, we're often playing detective. So I think when people are empowered to play detective, it can work in their favor when we're thinking about how to dose. But it's a little scary without having someone guiding you. And I know Nicole's practice is mostly people with type 1 diabetes, and so I think she often is adjusting insulin or suggesting insulin doses for protein because that helps them get back to their target faster.
And I think it really matters too if you're eating a high protein, low carb diet versus adding a little bit extra protein at a meal to avoid a spike in glucose. That's going to be two totally different doses of insulin. If you're working with someone with type 1 and you say, okay, use 25% more insulin if you have one extra serving of carbohydrate, versus I'm having two chicken breasts and some broccoli and I'm still going to spike from that, because you do, right? So I think it really depends, because at that I might take, you know, I might say, oh, that's 10 total, 8 total grams of carb, maybe 10 if there's a lot of broccoli. But then the glucose rises anyway. So I really do. I think you're right, John. I think it's very individualized and it's based on patterns. And that's the hardest part about diabetes, is fixing the number now means just giving insulin or eating something. But fixing it over time, like addressing the glucose excursions over time, is truly pattern management. And it's hard when you're just like, I want to fix it as a clinician, but also as a person with diabetes going, I'm 238 again. I'm 238 again, right? So it's hard to look at things from a 10,000 foot level and say, now what, right? As opposed to the moment to moment management at the same time.
Oh, those are amazing points. And I actually appreciate you saying that too, because the study that Nicole and I referenced, it says extra insulin for high protein, high fat meal, But what they kind of leave out is it's a high protein, high fat meal that also contains carbohydrate.
Right.
So it really, it there, you know, if it's a high fat, high protein, low carb, it could be completely different.
Right.
Dose. So that's a really great piece to clarify too.
Yeah, I love this idea of playing detective. That's essentially what we're empowering people to do. And I love it. So kind of transitioning, I know you gave another talk at ADCES about what I think entrepreneurship. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that talk.
Well, first, tell us about your entrepreneurship personally. Tell us where you are now and what you're doing so that we know why you are on this stage.
I did. Yes, I did not say that when I introduced myself.
Right.
So I worked for hospital systems, outpatient diabetes centers, most of my entire career. That's where I really wanted to be. You know, when COVID hit, I think it changed a lot of things for a lot of people. But for me, I found myself driving an hour to work to see people virtually. And it didn't really make sense for my family life. And it kind of spurred me to say, I wonder if I could do some virtual care from home. And I was lucky to be able to figure out how to do that. So that kind of led me on an entrepreneur journey since November of 2020. I opened a private practice out of my home, and I do all virtual care. I work with lots of different types of clients, but mostly people with diabetes or people with obesity who are looking to lose weight. And that is my practice so far. I really have enjoyed it. And how the talk came about is that I'm not the only one. I do a lot of my a lot of people will ask me kind of how do I get clients, and so I've kind of taken the route of social media, Facebook, Instagram, and I was noticing a trend that other dietitians and other people in the diabetes space were also on Facebook and Instagram advertising their services. And I thought, oh my gosh, how neat would it be to have a talk about diabetes care and entrepreneurship at ADCES. And it was surprising to me before. So that talk was on Monday, and that was the last day of the conference. By the end of the conference, I had probably met another six people I could have invited on that stage with us who are
wow,
in diabetes care and entrepreneurship. So I'm excited for this to continue to grow.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So I'm curious some of the things that you guys talked about on this panel.
Yes, yeah, so we did a panel discussion. There was three of us in the panel, and it was intentional that we all had three very different practices. So my practice specifically is I really wanted to adopt a coaching model. I had found in clinical practice kind of by chance that our employees where I used to work got unlimited visits with me. And when our employees got unlimited visits, I realized how much more I got to do with them. I could see them every 2 weeks. We could troubleshoot like the holiday gathering. We could figure out what was working well and what wasn't working well because I was just seeing them so regularly. I'd also been able to see people lose a significant amount of weight and then keep it off. And I got to follow them for years because they were employees and they got unlimited visits with me. So that was just kind of why I adopted my practice model. But the two other ladies who presented alongside me, her name is Haley Crean. She does a virtual diabetes self-management education program. And I think she was one of the first, if not the only, I may be wrong, but she might have been one of the first to have a completely virtual diabetes education program. So I was really thrilled to see that she had found a way to navigate doing DSMES in a way that was more convenient for people, because anybody in the diabetes care and education world knows that having a program is a lot of work in itself, but then getting people to come to your program often during a busy workday or, you know, business hours is not really convenient for people. So I was so excited that Haley has this program that can be done virtually.
And does she take insurance then?
Like she does.
An accredited
does.
Program and she's taking insurance. That's amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah. And her practice has grown to the point where I think she has two other dietitians that work for her. And so that was another reason I thought it would be really neat to have her on our panel, because she has has a fairly established practice in that regard.
Are there any other disciplines in her practice, or it's all dietitian?
I think it's dietitians, but I think it's dietitians currently. Yes.
True. Wow.
Yeah, because we do know there are other people that are that do, you know, outside of dietitians that also have their own businesses and that have been very successful and it really, you know, for themselves personally successful, professionally successful, but also improved many, many patients' lives, right? I mean, that's the, you know, ultimately you are getting, you're being able to balance having a young family, being able to work from home, but also still giving back, right? Like, you know, and paying your bills. I mean, it's a pretty wonderful time in your life to be able to balance all of those things.
It is. Thank you for bringing that up, because I joke all the time. I'm like, yeah, I decided to start a business and have a baby at the same time. but it was great, because it did allow me to grow at my own pace, which was great. So I've enjoyed it. But it's, I think what I, another thing that I've heard is that, you know, it's hard to work, you know, 60 hours for somebody else, but entrepreneurs work like 80 hours for themselves. And I've found that everyone I've met is kind of the same way. So it's not necessarily the easiest journey, but it's also really neat to build something in the way that you want to build it.
That's funny. That is really true.
I love it.
It's like different when you're doing all the things that you want to do as opposed to doing that work for someone else.
Yes.
Yeah. And then who was the third on the panel?
Yeah. So our third one was Madeline Vasquez. She is an up and coming diabetes care and education specialist. She's only been in practice for 5 years, and she's really phenomenal. She does everything from medications to insulin pump trainings, and she's kind of found herself in an endocrinology clinic. But what she was noticing and kind of what spurred her into entrepreneurship is that she was finding that all of her people with diabetes coming to see her in the clinic were asking all of these kind of off the wall, I don't say off the wall, but, you know, questions that they see on the internet. Well, I heard on the internet that I have to do this, or I saw this. And she was really motivated and inspired to change the game on the internet. She really wanted to put out evidence-based information, kind of myth dispelling about diabetes, you know, positive messages about diabetes. And she's doing an incredible job. She has, over 10,000 followers on Instagram. And she started her account also, I think, right around 2020. It's really amazing to see, just to see what people are doing with the platforms, the social media platforms that we have available. And I really think that the way Madeline's approach is it was really almost like a public health, you know, education. She really wanted to put information out that was not only helpful, but accurate for people with diabetes and inspiring and hopeful. So she's incredible as well.
Awesome. Well, I love that you guys did this, because I think we really need to think outside the box of just like, you have to come to a health system to get integrated and get diabetes education. And so I love that you guys are doing it a different way. And I hope to see that grow and kind of more innovative ways of delivering diabetes education. So before we wrap up, I just want to ask, I know you've attended lots of other sessions and you are so busy at the meeting, but anything else that kind of just stand out that you really want to share with our listeners?
Well, this is a little bit, I don't want to say it's self-serving, but what I really enjoyed was a part of kind of where I feel like the field is going. And I really have embraced this idea of coaching and empowerment. And I was so thrilled to see there was a session on coaching itself. And I think that's the first time I've ever seen a session that wasn't specific to the diabetes prevention program, but just on the coaching model as a care model. And then Lauren Plunkett did a really nice talk about reframing our language around food and nutrition. It was really anti-diet culture. And again, it was kind of along the model of coaching and knowing that that people have a lot of the answers within themselves. And if we use language that helps empower the person with diabetes, it can really we can flip the script and reframe a lot of the not only do we reframe the language, but then it reframes the outcomes that we might get. I think she used an example of a woman newly diagnosed with diabetes said, I don't want to be a fat grandma. And Lauren said, we're going to change your language. And they called it Operation Fit Grandma. And it was just the coolest thing to hear how they were approaching nutrition from, again, more of an add in versus takeaway language. She just did a really phenomenal job describing empowerment. And I loved that talk.
Wow. What an amazing way to close a discussion with you, right? That empowerment, that idea of empowering people to take care of themselves and feel good about where they are and where they're going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dawn. This was fantastic. And thanks everyone for tuning in to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue.